Hello and welcome to episode 14 of Pod on the Parish. It is hot and steamy out there. We've entered now, what is this, the second or third heatwave? I don't know, but I've got James here. How are you doing, James?
Very good, thanks. Very good. Yes, John, yourself?
Good, good, good. Yes, we were just having a little pre-chat. It is a bit full on at the moment, isn't it? Busy, busy, busy.
Very busy. Lots of changes in the sector with the new councils coming on board. And councils getting bigger in the parish and town council sector, so it creates lots of work.
So what kind of, so you mentioned it's been growing and you're looking to hire. We could maybe do a plug for hiring because you had a little, someone pulled out. But so lots of new councils coming on board, so newly created councils. So is that like good business for you? You're normally helping at that stage?
Yeah, well, it's a mixture of things, really. It's all to do a local government reorganisation. So because of that, you've got some councils that are grown in size, so they need a lot of HR support, both ensuring they do the recruitment right, which a lot of councils get wrong. And it's my bugbear, actually, how bad recruitment is in the sector. And a lot of councils, therefore, grown significantly to meet the demands of taking on extra services from the principal authorities that are financially stretched. And parish and towns can do unlimited increase in precept, so they pass the buck to them, and they deliver better services usually, but they need people to do it. Involved in that heavily.
So presumably you've been mentioning HR, so you're involved in HR. Who are you, James? Introduce yourself to the audience.
So yeah, I've been in the sector for over 30 years. Principally, I was a lawyer in a principal authority originally. I then became chief exec, town council. Did one in County Durham for 13 years, one in Hampshire for a couple of years, and then one in Sussex for 9 years. Managed to do a lot of HR things that were new. So we were the first council to get investors and people, the first one to do single status, and that resulted in us winning National Council of the Year. And when I went to live in Brighton to do my council in Seaford, I decided to go to university again at the grand old age of 44 and do CIPD. So I did my master's in HR. So I could do that all the time, basically. So that's what I do now.
Awesome, dude. So you took the plunge. Did you go? Yeah. So you funded yourself through a full degree. And were you working at that time, or?
I've done 3 degrees while I've been working. So yeah. So I did my first one, which was law, while I was working at Hartlepool Council. Then I did management whilst I was at in Hartlepool again. And then I did my HR one when I was at Seaford. Yeah. So all part time, evening classes. Yeah.
Well qualified. So you went straight to uni from college and then did your first degree then?
I went straight from work to I didn't do my first degree till I was working, so I didn't go to uni at all full time. When I was 18, it was a bad time to go to university if you live in the northeast. 1984, there was something going on. It was called the miners strike, so finances were tight, so I didn't have the real option to go to uni, so I had to find a job. I ended up falling into law through.
Was that your first job then?
It was my first job, was being a court clerk in a magistrate's court, where I did my part of my law degree, and then I finished it off at the council in Hartlepool when I was there.
Big moves. So everyone, yeah, you're quite well known in the industry. So I'm going to guess a lot of your business comes from word of mouth, and you're also quite active on LinkedIn. We normally see what you're up to. But is there something people don't know about you, other than what you share on LinkedIn and when we meet you at events?
Probably don't know that I used to be a trumpet player.
Trumpet player? Okay, we're gonna get you trumpet playing. No, yeah.
People might say I've been blowing me on trumpet ever since, but I haven't.
How many times have you done that one-liner?
I haven't. No, I think I've done it a couple of times. So I played the trumpet up until in my early 20s, but when I started studying law as well, I didn't have enough time to keep it going and be a rugby player, because I used to play competitive rugby as well.
Oh, really? Oh, who for?
West Hartlepool.
Okay. How long was your sort of tenure, let's say?
I always set myself a target of playing until I was 35. And when I was 35, I drove down to the local tip, took my rugby bag with us and threw it in a skip and drove away.
You had to give it up, I guess.
I just knew that if I kept on playing, I saw people who played too long, and I saw them come into work on Monday mornings and they could hardly walk. And I just thought, I don't want to be like that. So I knew there was a time frame.
When did you start playing?
When I was 11.
Yeah. Okay. So what's your proudest achievement?
Playing rugby?
Rugby.
County champions, I think, is probably the best we did, yeah. Winning the county championship.
Okay, cool. And I'm going to say, what's your proudest? Do you have a proudest achievement beyond that? Or is that what is your?
I think it's always got to be your family. Nothing beats that.
Oh yeah, nothing beats that. Good
Yeah.
answer. So we're going to pivot back to HR from there. So maybe do you manage? Yeah, I don't know. I was going to say, do you manage your kids through an HR policy?
No,
But
they manage me.
so what's a common mistake people do councils do related to HR?
There's quite a lot, quite frankly. But I think the one that we're seeing more and more of is it starts with poor recruitment processes, and it then continues into the first few months of recruitment where they don't manage the recruitment at all, the new person. And then suddenly they go, oh, they've been here for 2 years and they've got a claim for unfair dismissal and they don't really want them there. And that's going to change because it's going to be 6 months after January the 1st. In fact, it's 6 months now.
Yes.
So that's a big issue. We get so many people ringing us up saying, we've got a really bad employee. They've been with us for X number of years. How do we get rid of them? Have they always been bad? Yes. So why didn't you deal with it at the beginning? So it's, as my nanny used to say, stitch in time saves nine. And that's what people need to do when it comes down to dealing with poor performing employees. Employment Rights Act, it's already here. You may recall the government said they were going to bring the act in within 100 days of becoming the government. They got there over the line just on the 18th of December 2025, which was the last day of Parliament, I believe. However, in the rush to get it in within 100 days, they didn't have it all written. So it is coming in regulations sporadically over the next up to 2 to 3 years, in fact. We're not exactly sure. So there are some changes coming along the road. There's some already taking place. There's a lot that, quite frankly, don't affect parish and town councils that much because it's to do with unions and particularly large employers. Whilst I appreciate some councils do have unions, they're not such a big player as they are in the principal authority sector. So there are some changes around unions, but quite a lot actually, just to make it a lot easier to strike, and taking away some of the barriers that were put there by the previous government. What I'll do is I'll go through these, and if at any point anyone wants to ask a question, please just shout out, and I will answer your question. For some reason, my slide is not shown on the screen, but I'm sure I can manage without that. Okay. So Royal Assent, as I said, was 18th of December 2025. There was some effects that the only thing that happened immediately was the repeal of the Minimum Service Levels Act to do with strikes, which is something that I don't think has ever been used in parish and town council, so don't need to worry about that. 18th of February, repealing a lot of the trade union stuff, like the 10-year ballot, simplifying industrial action processes, enhanced protection against dismissal for taking industrial action. So that's there's now an enhancement there. One change that would affect you is there's an now there's a employees that are eligible for day one rights for paternity leave and unpaid parental leave, and they can give notice at that point, although it didn't come in until a little bit later. So that was the one thing that really did come in early for us. In April this year, the day one right paternity leave came in. Now, what that means is that any parent can take up to 4 weeks parental leave during an annual leave year. That is unpaid unless you enhance it. It can be paid, but only if the council choose to make it paid. The statutory right is unpaid. During the lifetime of a child, they can take up to 18 weeks, and that's per child. I'm not sure how people monitor that because if you're changing employers, you're going to have to be relying on the honesty of the individual to say, I've never taken any parental leave previously, or I've taken lots. But that's one change that came in, and that needs to be reflected in your policies that you have, because that is a statutory right. So if someone asks, they can take paternity leave. Whistleblown. This strengthened the whistleblown rights for employees to do with sexual harassment, if they blow the whistle on that. Now, I'm going to talk about sexual harassment a little bit more in a couple of minutes, because that is a one that I believe is potentially going to be used more and more in parish and town councils. We are seeing some incredibly, I don't know whether to call it innovative or just not literal at all, claims being made at the moment by employees. And the main reason for that is they are using AI to generate claims against councils. So what you are seeing is somebody who doesn't qualify for unfair dismissal will suddenly be leaving because of an issue, and they will say it's because they are a whistleblower or because of a disability, neither of which the council were ever aware of. But AI is telling them that's what you can claim for because you've been there for less than 2 years, which is now 6 months, which we'll come to in a minute. So the bereaved partners leave as well. Again, that's unpaid, but it can be paid, which came in April also. This one probably didn't affect many parish and town councils, but there's now no lower earnings limit for statutory sick pay. So whereas in the past you had to earn over £125 a week for statutory sick pay, you now doesn't matter what you earn. If you're a part-time barman earning 20 quid a week, you are entitled to statutory sick pay if you go off on the sick. And it is from day one as opposed to 3 clear days as it used to be. It's either 80% of the normal pay or £123.25 per week, whichever is the lower. So that will affect some parishes and towns, but probably not that many. If all of your employees are on the local government pay scales, then everyone would have been over the limit anyway, unless they were earning a very sh short number of hours. It's possible that they didn't earn enough to claim statutory sick pay before. So it is worth checking if you have employees that in the past maybe haven't been able to get statutory sick pay because they only work 2 or 3 hours a week. It may be that, well, they will now qualify for statutory sick pay if they go off on the sick. And as I say, it's from day one, as soon as they go off. There's also menopause guidance, which again is quite a big issue. That a lot of that guidance though is for employers of over 250 employees, which is not going to affect anyone in the parish and town sector. As far as I'm aware, the biggest employer in the sector is about 100 employees. So that means that everybody's outside of that. However, there is in the guidance, there is a recognition that menopause can now be classed as a disability in certain circumstances that will affect parish and town councils. So it is advisable for that reason to have a menopause policy in place, because it is clearly an issue that the government are wanting to address within the new legislation. The Simplifying the Trade Union recognition is quite simply that now, as an employer, you have to notify employees that they have a right to join a union. So that should be in your onboarding process now, that as an employee, they have a right to join a union. There are also some other changes that came about as a result of the recent changes. If a union asks to meet with your employees, you have to provide them with a room to do so, which is going to be interesting for councils that haven't got a room, but we'll see how that works out. But obviously, that would only apply if you have a team of employees. If it's a single parish clerk, it's not an issue. But if you've got employees under the Act, you have to provide them with a room to meet potential union members. So that also from April 7th is the a new body. We've gone full circle here because I think a lot of you remember that. There's a point in time when they're getting rid of quangos. And of course, we lost the standards board as part of that. I think they called it the bonfire of the quangos, if I remember rightly. There's a new one, the Fair Work Agency. It does bring in work from a couple of other bodies, namely one I'd never heard of, I've got to be honest, the Gangmasters, and the Labour Law Abuse Authority. Don't know if they've had any impact in parish and town councils and also some parts of the HMRC. But what they can do is, and they will do, is they will represent employees at tribunals, not for everybody, just when there's a case that they believe is worthy of them being involved in, which is probably where they're looking at setting a precedent. So that is going to be something to keep an eye on. I would say that it's not massively funded, so I don't think we'll be seeing much impact in our sector, but you never know, it could happen. So other measures that are coming in October. There's going to be some regulations on the Fair Pay Agreement, adult social care doesn't affect us. Procurement, two-tier code, tightening the tipping law, so tips are now taxed in a different way, that's how it's dealt with. The duty to inform workers, I've already mentioned, of their right to join a union, so that needs to be in your onboarding process, that they have a right to join a union, and strengthen the union's right of access. That's exactly what I've just described. They need to have a room, and they can come in once a week to meet your staff if they wish. There's no definition of how long or anything like that they can take up the time of your staff. So that's going to be something I dare say. Hopefully, we'll get some guidance. There isn't any at the moment, or it could require case going to tribunal to set a precedent for that particular right, how long it lasts for. The other thing that's common, and I mentioned earlier about sexual harassment in the workplace, as an employer, you have a duty currently to prevent sexual harassment in the workplace. I've got a little bit more on this further down. But from October, they've changed the definition from taking reasonable steps to taking all reasonable steps. There's no definition of what that means, though, what the difference is between all reasonable and reasonable. That comes in October, but apparently we're going to get some guidance on that in January. So for the next 3 months, you'll just have to hope you don't get that wrong, which seems incredible. But there we are. That's where it's being implemented. This is an area I believe where we will see cases coming against councils. And there's obviously some areas where people are more vulnerable than others to having claims made that could be fictitious. And the two areas is a male office, a mixed office, but also involving councillors. There has been a case in the past that involved sexual harassment by a chairman of a council with a clerk. That was in 2007, Chard Town Council. And the end result of that was that the mayor of the council had to pay the clerk £34,000 in damages out of his own pocket. And to do so, he had to sell his own house to pay the clerk the damages. So that has happened in the past, but I'm expecting to see, and I know that was a legitimate case, by the way. That wasn't a fictitious one. I know the full story behind that one, which was in the press. So I'm not telling you anything that's not in the public domain. But this new legislation will mean, in my view, that you are probably going to see lots of more claims coming in this direction, because AI is going to point people to this. They'll ask a question. Have you ever, when you're putting stuff in AI at the moment, it's asking you questions. Have you ever made a whistleblower statement at the council at your employer? And if someone puts yes, they say, right, that's the claim we're going to make. If they ask the question, has anyone sexually harassed you at work? And you put yes, that will then create a claim against the council for sexual harassment. So I foresee this as being a problem for the sector. What I would say is that AI has actually made more work for HR rather than less at the moment. The number of claims that are coming in are much greater than used to be just because of AI. So it'll introduce a obligation not to pre for you to not to prevent, sorry, the harassment of employees by third parties. I've got a little bit more on that further down, but that's under a protected characteristic. It's not harassment for anybody. So if a councillor was to come in and harass me on a regular basis when I was working at the council, and it was just because he didn't like me, there's no duty to prevent that. But if he was coming in and harassing me because I was in a gay relationship, for example, then you would have a duty to prevent that as an employer. So that would change things. So again, this is where the duty to prevent comes in, and I will give a little bit more on this in a minute. There's also going to be some guidance on what is reasonable to determine whether an employee is taking all reasonable steps, and that this basically sets out various areas around the harassment section. I've picked this bit out because I think this is an area that we need to be very aware of as a sector. There's an obligation on employers not to permit the harassment of their employees by third parties. Now, if that was just that, you would immediately think of we had 32 investigations last year at various councils around the country. And of those 32, and I did check this before, well, yesterday, 24 of them involved what I would define as bullying or harassment of an officer by one or more councillors. Now, at that time, this legislation wasn't in place. But if this legislation was in place and those officers could claim that it was because of a protected characteristic, which I'll show you which ones apply in a minute, then they would have been able to, the council would have been able to take action to prevent that from taking place using this legislation. So it is going to be interesting to see what happens. Now, this duty that's put on the employer does say that you have to take all reasonable steps to prevent employees from being harassed by people who are not fellow employees. So that includes councillors, but it includes customers, clients, service users, you name it, anybody who comes into contact with the employees. you have a duty to prevent that. So harassment must be related to one of the protected characteristics, which is sex, race, disability, age, religion or belief, sexual orientation, gender reassignment. Bizarrely, not included in there is marriage, which is one of the protected characteristics. So that one's not included. So they can, if they are being harassed on the basis of any of those characteristics, you as an employer need to check to see if that's violating their employees' dignity or creating an intimidating or hostile, degrading, humiliating or offensive environment. Then you as an employer need to take reasonable steps to prevent that. Now, this is where, for me, for counsellors in particular, this creates an interesting conundrum for counsellors, because you're probably all aware of the Harvey Ledbury case, which set down precedents around what you can and can't do when you're investigating counsellors. I am writing an article about that shortly, which probably will be in Clarkson Counsel's Direct. And the reason I'm writing that is that I feel that that case was flawed for a number of reasons. And it's been misinterpreted as well, because it didn't take account of employment law. You as an employer have a duty of care towards your employees, and therefore you need to take all reasonable steps to protect them in any event. This creates an extra string to that bow. And if someone has been harassed, you can't then just say, by a counsellor, for example, you can't say, well, the standards, the monitoring officer will deal with that in the standards committee. That will not wash if it goes to tribunal. And we've dealt with a few cases recently where people have been trying to use their excuse, and actually it's fallen flat on its face. So it's an interesting scenario that's being exacerbated by this legislation. So a permit does not mean that employers must guarantee the harassment never occurs. That's obviously impossible, but you must take reasonable steps to prevent it. Now, if for example, that means there's a counsellor who's accused of, say, sexually harassing a employee, what reasonable steps could you take? Well, probably what you'd be looking at is not permitting them in the office, unaccompanied. If they do want to come in, they'd have to make arrangements to do so. Probably not allowing them to email the employee anymore. The times when they come into contact with that employee, there'd have to always be other people around. So, for example, at council meetings, you could even look to reduce the connection with them and the employee by removing them from committees. You can't stop them coming to council meetings. All of this is open to challenge. I'm not going to say anything other than that, but that would be reasonable steps. So the council, where this claim has been made, you need to investigate the matter promptly. You either want to remove the customer, or the councillors have, in this scenario, support the employee, changes to working arrangements, as I've just said, and make sure appropriate policies and training are in place. If all of that's done, the employee is much less likely to be liable for the actions of the misdemeaning person, whether that be a councillor or a customer or whoever. As I say, this is potentially a very tricky area for councils, especially around errant councillors, because they have a bit more power than if it's just a member of the public, as we know. So it does change the dynamics of the situation quite a lot. So the another big change that's coming about, well, it takes effect on the 1st of January, is the Employment Tribunal time limits, 6 months. So this is coming in October, sorry. So at the moment, if someone wants to make a claim to an employment tribunal, they must do it within 3 months, less a day, of the incident, the final incident that causes them to, for example, an unfair fair dismissal, a constructive dismissal, to resign. If they don't do it within that time period, tribunals are extremely tight on that. They do not extend for whatever reason. And there's a few cases involving town clerks where they haven't got the claims in on time. One of them by 24 hours, and there's the cases on there on the internet, and they said, sorry, you're 24 hours too late, you can't make your claim. But that's going up to 6 months. So you're going to have this period now, when someone leaves, of up to 6 months where they can submit a claim for unfair dismissal, wherever it may be, disability rights. So it does take, it does mean that that period extends. So it gives them more time to get on OAI, I'm afraid. The mandatory seafarers charter, I don't think that affects many of us. It doesn't apply to boats in the village pond. The measures taken effect in January. So the reduction of unfair dismissal period from 2 years to 6 months. So this is again another big factor for dealing with employees. So at the moment, for someone to claim unfair dismissal, they must be employed for 2 years. From January the 1st, it's actually 6 months, which means it's already effective now. Because if you are employing someone today, they will qualify for 6 months, or just last week, they will qualify for 6 months' work on January the 1st. So it already applies to 6 months. Now, one of the key consequences of that is that if you are, we were talking about recruitment at the beginning, one of the many things you need to get right in recruitment now is do not do 6 months probation anymore. Most people in the sector do 6 months. It's a definite no-no because that means that the day they finish probation, they qualify for unfair dismissal. You give them 3 months probation. You could extend it by a month, or even then you're getting close to, if you go through a dismissal process, you could end up with a 6 month period. So if someone's not suitable, and I will emphasize this later on, you need to deal with that person who's not suitable straight away. One of my frustrations often with, as I said at the beginning with John, when I was talking to John earlier, one of my frustrations in the sector is how bad some councils are at doing recruitment. And then they have major consequences as an issue. And one of the reasons they're bad at recruitment is they do not do a good onboarding exercise. They don't do one-to-ones performance management during the first probation period. They get to the end of probation and they suddenly have a list of all of the things the person's done wrong in the last 6 months, but they haven't been performance managing them. Now, if you do that, they've already qualified for unfair dismissal and you think you've got a bad employee on your hands. You need to deal with it straight away. There's no sitting on your hands with new employees anymore, because 6 months is going to very quickly be eaten up. So that is a big issue for councils, definitely, is getting that right. There's also fire and rehire protections, not something that happens very often in parishes and town councils, to be fair, although we have had one instance of that last year. The last one there is unlimited damages as well for unfair dismissal claims. There's already unlimited damages for disability claims, etc., but not for unfair dismissal at the moment. Unfair dismissal qualifies for 12 months maximum salary. Going forward, that's going to be unlimited. Now I've got some, I've got some extra bits on this. Again, this is a big area that we need to get right. This is going to change the dynamics of negotiating settlement agreements, for example, because if I was to give you an example, a scenario, if the council were to, for example, dismiss an employee for failure to follow reasonable instructions or to a breach of contract in some other way, so they go through a disciplinary process, they get that, hopefully get all that right. If that employee, for example, is a 58-year-old, they could claim that they will never get a job comparable to the one they've got now. And say, for example, it's a clerk and they're on £60,000 a year. They would say, I need that £60,000 a year from 58, and I was planning on retiring when I'm 68. So I need 10 years of that salary, which is £600,000. But I also need the differential between the pension I'm going to get for the rest of my life and what I would have got. And I expect to live till I'm 80, and I'm going to retire at 68. So whatever that differential is, so very quickly, you are looking at potentially £1 million claims. Very quickly. So the reasons to get your dismissals absolutely on the button correct could not be greater than it is now. And it also doesn't just mean dismissals as well. It can be a constructive dismissal. And the one I figure for, and we deal with a lot of constructive dismissals, is where usually, very often, it's a clerk who's been bullied at work. And people who've been in the sector for more than 6 months probably know one person at least who's been bullied at work by councillors. I'm not saying all councillors do that because they don't. There's some brilliant councillors out there, but unfortunately, there's some really bad ones as well. If they're getting bullied at work by a councillor and they've got evidence to that effect and that's been allowed to continue, and the council make the mistake of saying, oh, the monitoring officer will deal with that, you're not going to be able to defend it. So that then goes to a tribunal. And if that clerk happens to be, as I say, 56, 57, they say, I'm going to work for another 10 years, but I'm not going to have that job anymore. You potentially are looking at a £1 million claim very quickly. And that is the area that scares me for the sector. One thing I would advise you do, and I don't think I've put this at the end, is make sure your insurance covers you for legal claims. Yeah, employment legal claims. Just make sure you're, because we come across clients whose insurance cover doesn't. Just make sure your insurance cover covers you for legal claims against the council from employees. Doesn't necessarily mean they pay out everything, by the way, because they probably won't. But it will help to make the pill a little bit sweeter. So if an employee This age can be a lifetime reduction in pension payouts. So, as I mentioned, will so the question is then: is does this change the way we deal with employees of different ages? So, someone who's 25 and you're going through a disciplinary, they're not going to be able to claim. They're not going to be able to work again. So their claim potentially is a lot less than somebody, say, for example, who's 56, 57, says, "Oh, people aren't employing people of my age anymore." So they perhaps are going to be treated differently. Be interesting to see. This is just my thoughts. The impact on the employment tribunal delays as well as a factor. So this is the one thing that's in the employer's favour, is at the moment, typically, if you make a claim to an employment tribunal, the delay to getting to a hearing is 3 years. With all of the changes, the reduction to 6 months to qualify for tribunal claims for unfair dismissal and the unlimited damages for unfair dismissal, and qualifying for unfair dismissal after 6 months' work, all of those factors together is going to mean there's going to be a heck of a lot more claims made. And that's before you've taken account of what I mentioned earlier, which is the aid of AI to help people make claims. So there are going to be a lot more claims made. That is the one thing that will help employers, because that's the one thing, if it comes to arguing the settlement agreement, you could say, well, it's going to take you 5 years before you get to tribunal. We can settle with you for X amount. So that will be the only time in all of these changes there's some benefit to the employer, because they're not investing enough money in tribunals, quite frankly. There was a case recently where a disabled bank worker was awarded 4.7 million. Now, as I said, disabled people, a claim for a protected characteristic at the moment is unlimited. So that person got 4.7 million because they were deemed that they wouldn't be able to go back to work again because of various issues that happened in that case. That could happen just for an unfair dismissal going forward. That could very easily happen. So further measures taking place, action plans on gender equality, supporting employees through the menopause. You have to have something there for that. That's mandatory. There's enhanced dismissal protections for pregnant women. There's already protection there, obviously, for people who are pregnant, but there's more. It's more enhanced coming forward. The details of these I'm not giving you because they change. They've changed several times, but these are things that are going to come during 27. There's going to be steps, what's regarded as reasonable, to determine whether an employee is taking all reasonable steps to prevent sexual harassment. That is due to come out in January, specifying what you need to do to prevent sexual harassment, taking all reasonable steps. Extending blacklist and protections. I'm not going to pretend I know what that is because I don't know where it is. It's something that has appeared, but it's a new one on me. Industry relations framework is coming along, and regulations of umbrella companies as well, which is to do with won't affect us, but that's to do with companies that may be located abroad for tax havens, etc. So collective redundancy, the thresholds being changed, flexible work, and again, there's more changes coming around that. Bereavement leave, including pregnancy loss, more changes on that. End an exploitative use of 0 hours contracts. Well, this was one of the flagship announcements prior to the election, that 0 hours contracts would be made illegal. There's a phrase change there, you may notice. It's now exploitative 0 hours contracts, which wasn't in the original manifesto. We haven't got a definition of what exploitative means yet. Probably got a rough idea what it means, but that hasn't come out. So you will be able to continue with 0 hours contracts, those who do have them, and I've certainly worked at councils where we've used them to the mutual benefit of both parties. But whether what that means and whether you'll be allowed to with the ones you have, we don't know until the guidance comes out. Workplace balloting is going to be electronic, and some more union changes as well. They've done quite a lot of the union changes. This is just a little bit about AI. So this was the case where the HR consultants, I don't know if anyone saw these this headline. The headline was that an AI system had won its first employment tribunal. I think that's how the Daily that newspaper known for its veracity, the Daily Mail, I think that's how it described it, as the AI won its first case, which was not true. AI did the initial, what I've been describing, the correspondence, the letters. So this company, Garfield AI, is run by a solicitor, but it's outside of his operation as a solicitor. So it's not covered by the Law Society. It's not registered with the Law Society. It's got nothing to answer to. It is a real loophole, this. And you can go on there and pay paid 10 quid to get a letter before action, paid 20 quid to do a ET claim. There's various things you can do on there just by putting your details in, and it will generate all of the documentation you require. And you pay for each element that you require from the AI. Now, what did happen? It wasn't AI that won the case. They actually employed one of the best HR barristers in the country when it went to tribunal, and he won the case, not the AI. So don't believe everything you read. One thing I would say is, if you do get any approaches and anything that comes in from a AI generated, or even just a letter that you think that employee didn't write this themselves, you know the abilities of employees, and if they've got a letter that comes in to you making a claim or even a statement about issues, make sure you get the HR advice as soon as you can. Don't sit on it, because that is an issue that's going to happen more and more. It's a bit like when the Freedom of Information Act first came in, we suddenly awash with FOIs. So actions to take: reduce all probations to 3 months maximum. Don't do them any longer than that. Ensure you have a comprehensive onboarding, including training, regular one-to-ones. Act quickly where there's an issue. Review our policies to make sure you cater for changes. We do that for our clients; they get them all done for them. But make sure you do cater for all changes in your policies. When you're dealing with a disciplinary grievance or any performance management, always, and it's amazing how many people don't do this, always check your policy before you start the process. If you don't follow the policy, you set yourself up for potentially a big fall. So do make sure you check your policy to make sure you follow the right procedure within your policy, and make sure your policies are ACAS compliant as well. That's your grievance and your disciplinary. Make sure they don't contravene the ACAS requirements. Document, 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 or record, record, record. If you are dealing with anything with a HR matter, particularly a disciplinary or a grievance or anything like that, make sure you confirm everything in email afterwards. So if you have a meeting, which is a performance management meeting, for example, and you highlight in that meeting that the employee is not meeting the required standards of cleaning in the public toilets, for example, or wherever it may be, make sure you send them an email to confirm that after the meeting, so you've got it documented. The beauty of doing it on an email is that means you've got it timelined. So you've got the date and the time that you sent that email. So if you go to tribunal, you've got primary evidence that you had that conversation with that employee.
Awesome. Thank you very much, James. Another good event. You've spoken at Scribe Academy a few times, so much appreciated you taking the time to come along and share your wisdom. So based on, we had some questions, how would you wrap this up? What's one thing you would like listeners to remember?
I think the key thing to remember is to get the recruitment right. Make sure you get your whole package right, what you want. Make sure you get your person spec right, your job descriptions, and be aware that of the 6 month rule coming in, which is there now. If you don't get it right, then claim unfair dismissal after 6 months. And if you have a bad employee there for 6 months, do nothing about it, then you're in problems. So probation period from now onwards, 3 months. Don't do six.
You have got the point across very strongly. So I'm going to go back and learn more about you. So we're 1984 when you're 18, were we?
Yes,
So
86. 80, yeah,
86,
86. I was 18. Yeah,
the
yeah.
miner strike is on. It's a bit depressing. What? How? What was the vibe for James Corrigan at 18? What were you doing at the time?
I was enjoying myself playing rugby. I was at Hartlepool Sixth Form College, where we went unbeaten for the whole season. And we, I've got to be careful what I say here, but we stuck it up a few people that didn't expect us to, especially the private schools, which we always enjoyed doing. Yeah.
Yes.
Can't help but smile at that. In fact, Durham School refused to play us again for about 4 years after we beat them 54-3, because they weren't used to getting beat off the Oaks from the comprehensive.
53, that is sweet.
Yeah, so that was good. So, and the big problem was the economy was on its knees in the Northeast because of the miners' strike. My family were all self-employed, so we felt it.
So if you could go up to your 18-year-old self at that time, James would rock up. What if you wanted to give him a bit of advice? I mean, I don't know whether you'd listen, but what would you give him?
Probably something that's become much more common now, but wasn't so common when I was 18, probably not when you were either, but I would go traveling around the world, and probably play rugby in a few other countries and things like that, and just taking a few more things. But I don't regret what I've done, but I think that's the one bit of advice I would have given myself then.
Yes, maybe give it to yourself now.
Well, it's coming. We're getting a camper van.
Sweet. When's the camper van coming?
Towards the back end of this year is probably when we're aiming for. Yeah.
I've got the same mission. Yeah, we want the
Yeah.
camper van. That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
So we got the pay it forward question next. So the previous guest, I think it was Eleanor Green. Yeah, she asked a simple question for the next guest. What is your favorite season and tell us why?
Got to be spring. Just you're coming out the doldrums of winter, you're fighting through winter, and then suddenly you get to this time when everything's coming to life. If you're a dog walker like me, you see things changing. The morning's getting a bit lighter, the plants are starting to come through, the flowers are there, the grass starts to smell when they're cutting it. All of those things are just the best time, really.
They are the best time. They're good
Yeah.
vibes. You
Yeah.
can't, yeah, you're good vibes. Yeah, I'll probably go with you on that. So for your next guest, for our next guest, do you have a question for them?
Well, I hope they understand rugby. Because the question is, if they were playing rugby, what position would they play?
Good.
And why? And why?
Yeah, they're gonna have to, if they don't know rugby, they're gonna have to research it, which also be quite interesting itself as well.
Yeah, quite. Yeah.
Awesome. Okay. Well, thanks for that. Thanks for today. And yeah, have a good rest of the day.
Yep. Cheers, John. See you soon.
Cheers.